All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings. And so today I wanted to take a little bit of a detour from some of the heavier things I was covering over the last few episodes here, things on voting rights that are still up in the air, a really dark history of tyranny from the states and the Civil War and what have you. You know, very heavy, big picture stuff. And today I wanted to take more of a, well, I suppose it is still big picture, but more of a personal, smaller, more personal political situation. And that is meat and the environment. Now, as many of you are probably aware, industrial farming and the excessive consumption of meat, not only in the United States, but around the world, is a big contributor, one of the many contributors, to climate change that we're seeing today. And not only you have the animals themselves that produce waste and gases that go out into the atmosphere, you also have the industrial processes that make, you know, the industrial processes behind industrial farming to make this meat more palatable, more packageable, and consumable in the more modern sensibilities. And so it's one of these things that we're going to solve, and we're going to make an argument for reducing our impact on the climate through basic economics and through basic supply and demand. As it stands right now, the demand is very large for beef in particular, chicken, turkey, pork, what have you. And so therefore the supply has to be large to meet it. However, if that demand were to decrease, i.e., if people were to stop eating meat in such large numbers that they are now, then the supply would have to decrease, which naturally would create smaller emissions or fewer emissions out into the atmosphere, which would reduce the effects on the climate that we're seeing now. So I think it would be beneficial to go into, well, how does industrial agriculture affect the climate? Like, really, how does that happen? One of the largest contributing factors to climate change within the agricultural industry actually comes from cows and beef, and not from where you would think. It actually comes from their waste and their flatulence, shall we say. Cows, when they produce their waste and excrement and flatulence, farts, really, they release methane gas into the atmosphere. And methane, actually, is a far more potent gas than even carbon dioxide, which is obviously one of the big things that come out of combustion engine cars and many other forms of transportation. But methane is more potent. It has a bigger impact on the environment per, you know, square unit of it than, you know, say, CO2 or really a lot of other things that go out into the environment. And so that's one piece. And then the second piece of it is that it comes down to land use, which is another big problem. Obviously, when you picture a cow farm, even an industrial one, you picture these large fields and buildings. They haven't built cow skyscrapers yet either. So they're not, you know, you don't look out in the Midwest and see these gigantic skyscrapers filled with cows from the bottom to the top floor, but you need these long, expansive fields and farms in order to hold all these cows. And same is true with chickens and the like. And so it requires a lot of land, and that requires a lot of developing of land that might not be used to contain cows or chickens or any other sort of animal. And that really impacts biodiversity. I've mentioned the importance of biodiversity in the past, in some episode I made a long while ago, but it's incredibly important that the soil and the grasses and animal species themselves are diverse, as it prevents big calamities from happening. If there's a particular disease that wipes out a bunch of one type of plant that is not protected against that, and we are completely reliant on that one plant, then the society is really in trouble. That's actually what happened in Ireland in the 1800s with the potato famine. The particular virus killed that one type of potato that the entire country was reliant on. So when these industrial farmers raise and slaughter animals that produce a lot of methane gas that is released into the atmosphere at large rates, and reuse a lot of land and develop a lot of land that could be used for increasing biodiversity, it really creates a nasty effect on the climate and on the environment around us. It's not just the cows that are being harmed in this process. There are all sorts of other animals too, including us. And so one of the easiest things that have been ideas that have been passed around is sort of things like No Meat Mondays, where you just don't eat meat on Monday. That's a personal thing you can do that would cut down on that demand for red meat in particular, but just meat in general. You would really cut down on that demand, which would therefore decrease that supply as well, using basic economic theory. And in addition to that, there are ideas of switching to chicken as the primary meat of your household. You can, and then it just creates a lot of moral dilemmas because there are far more chickens that are required to produce the same amount of meat that is required and, you know, needed in like one section of beef. So if you're okay with a massacre of chickens to get the same amount of meat that you would have had under beef, that's fine, I suppose. That's a moral decision, and that's really on you. But you're going to have a lot of chickens going into that meal that you've had. This is not a moral argument that we're making on this point. It's just a more of a purely economic and climate perspective. The moral, I'm going to save that for you and your own personal decisions based on your own moral compass. There's vegetarianism, which is obviously an even greater extension of that, where you cut out all meat from your diet. That really cuts down on that demand, which would really cut down on the supply if enough people did it. And then there's veganism, which basically cuts out all animal products altogether. So even the industrial raising of chickens for eggs, for example, would even be diminished on that front. There's not really as much of an impact on climate change at that point. Again, it's more of a moral, personal decision, and that is outside of the bounds of this episode. But it does sound like a lot of people are rethinking their consumption of meat and are starting to employ some of these methods in their own personal lives. A quarter of Americans, according to a study I found, cut their meat consumption in the year 2020. So that's, you know, one out of every four. That's pretty significant. And in the UK, there are the rate of vegans, I suppose, has gone up 350% over the last few years. I mean, this is it's a trend that's growing pretty quickly. And more and more people seem to be doing it all the time, whether it's for moral or climate or economic reasons. They seem to be doing this at a higher rate than ever before. And I think this sort of ideology, it creates two things. Number one, it creates this idea, this larger philosophy that we are just one part of nature. Humans are not the be-all, end-all of the world. The world has been around long before humans and likely will be around long after humans, particularly if the events of climate change continue their current trends. And then the second thing, I think it protects our own personal freedoms and creates a more stable society. Now, what do I mean by that? The answer is pretty simple. The Pentagon has come out in recent years and has said that climate change is a threat to national security. How so? That seems kind of odd, right? But the reasoning is that think of all the wildfires out west in Colorado and California. Think of the hurricanes that have ravaged the Southeast in recent years. Every time something like that happens, a federal response is required. And federal troops from the Department of Defense, whether they're with the Coast Guard, the Marines, what have you, they have to go out and solve the problem. And so they're deployed fixing up another hurricane in Houston when they could be out focusing on things that are really of national importance. And so in addition to that, there's melting of the ice caps on the poles. And so now that melting of the ice around the poles creates better strategic positions for nations like Russia and China to get in and get a tactical advantage on the U.S. In terms of just development around that area and obviously military strategy. So because climate change is creating this national security threat, when you come back to the individual, there are things that you can do to prevent these threats from being as dramatic as they are now. And one of the biggest ways is you can just stop eating as much meat or cut it out altogether, however much you'd like. It's really up to you. Again, it's a moral decision between that's completely on you. But it's a very easy way that we can significantly cut down. Again, if this is applied on a large enough scale, we can significantly cut down on the emissions that we're having onto the environment. If you look at the fact that 11% of global emissions come from agriculture, if you cut that down significantly, that's, you know, that's one-tenth of global emissions that you're working on. And then if you look at deforestation, which, again, I came back to the land piece here, you know, all that land that's being used for things like farm, among other things, that deforestation, that makes up about 6%. That's another 6% we're taking care of. And obviously, the use of fossil fuels to power the industrial farming complex, to use that term, that's 33%. If you start working on all of these sources of emissions by focusing on one industry, and it's an industry that's interconnected with a bunch of different sources now, you can really cut down on those emissions. And obviously, this is a common myth that has gone around, that it really, the responsibility falls on individuals to fix climate change, when it really falls on large companies. And yes, it's true, but both are true. And obviously, you need to have larger policies on the federal, state, and local levels, and the global level, and the global stage that address climate change. And at the same time, you do need individuals stepping in to go ahead and fix this and to work on this problem that is an existential threat to the entire human race. And so we can take this philosophy that we are just one part of nature, we are connected to nature in a system, much in the same way that nations are tied together through economic treaties and connections and things like that. And we have to realize that our ecosystem is in a very delicate balance all the time. And even as individuals, we can make changes that will not only help ourselves, but will help everyone else around us.